Cape Talk, Family Matters.
Now, we're talking advances in autism, and I'm going to use the word management carefully today because I think my guest would like me to use a different word. I'll explain in a minute. Talking about autism, though, with me in studio is a mother who has walked this path with not one but two of her sons and who has come through that personal journey determined to fight for other families in South Africa to have access to the best possible care and outcomes for their children. Her name is Ilona Gershlovitz, and she's published a book with writer Marion Scher called Saving My Sons, A Journey with Autism. I have been lost in this book for the last 2 weeks, Ilona. It's lovely to finally meet you and have you with us in studio. Welcome to Cape Town.
It's wonderful to be in studio with you today. Thank you.
I used the words autism management, but I think you would rather I said autism treatment, because one of the profound messages of this book is that you see autism as something that can be treated as a medical condition in certain circumstances.
You're absolutely correct. For so many years, autism was viewed as a lifelong disability. And in fact, autism really does not have to be lifelong. Autism is a treatable medical illness, and recovery from autism is possible.
That's groundbreaking stuff, and it's going to be a complete surprise to many people listening. The immediate question is there scientific study to back up that position, Ilona?
The scientific study backing up this position was already published in 1987. Recovery from autism is really not a new idea. Dr. Lovas, who is the creator of a teaching methodology called Applied Behavior Analysis, ABA, already proved in 1987 that children can recover from autism. He published a paper where he took children between the ages of 3 and 4, and he placed them into 7 hours a day of ABA, and they had a 47% recovery. Since then, there have been many papers on treating autism and on recovery.
Now, that wasn't the message you got when your first child was diagnosed with autism. And, okay, so we're going to get to ABA and a little bit more about what it is and what that 7 hours a day entails, because it's no easy task. But Ilona, let's start by talking about your son, David, who in his early months of childhood was a completely normal baby, meeting all of his regular milestones until something changed.
We took home a perfectly normal little baby who scored 9 out of 10 on his APGAR. The first year of life was perfect. He developed normally, little bit of reflux, nothing out of the ordinary. And around 15 months, we started to see a regression. He had an infection, landed in hospital. And when he came home, we noticed that he no longer gave us eye contact. He no longer responded to his name. And he appeared to be in his own world.
Now, it took you a long time to get a proper diagnosis for David. And when you got that diagnosis of autism, one of the most powerful moments of this book is reading your response to it because of what you were told. You were told, that's it, sorry, there's nothing you can do. Your child has autism, and somebody even said to you, put him in a home and forget about it.
Exactly. We were told goodbye and good luck. There is nothing that you can do. Being an attorney, I was well taught in how to research, so I was not prepared to give up on my son. And very soon after receiving that diagnosis, we realized that the answers and solutions actually were in America. And we attended many conferences over the years hosted by the top medical professionals. I'm talking, Pippa, about neurologists, immunologists, professors from Harvard University who are saying that autism is a treatable medical illness.
You were incredibly lucky to have access to the resources to be able to do that, Ilona, and to fight as hard as you did to bring experts here to South Africa. All through this book, what struck me is that you didn't just do it for yourself. Every time you had access to that, you thought, who else can benefit from this? How do we help the broader community with this knowledge? And it wasn't as easy as saying, let's tell everybody what's going on here, because you encountered quite a bit of resistance from the existing body of thought around autism in South Africa, didn't you?
Absolutely. I think my husband and I realized early on that my son would really get the help he needed if we helped others, if others could find their voice, if other parents could have all the hopes and dreams for their children that we had for our son fulfilled because of the journey that he walked. At least our road would have meant something. And there was resistance when we hosted the first Challenging Children conference 10 years ago. That was groundbreaking for South Africa. And actually, we had presenters presenting on the medical treatments, because children with autism suffer from bowel inflammation. They have nutrient deficiencies, viral infections, food allergies. So there's a whole treatment protocol for them. And then we also had Dr. Doreen Grampichet, who's the founding director of the Center for Autism and Related Disorders. The Star Academy, which we established, is now an affiliate of her organization. And 10 years ago, when she presented on ABA, it was the first time that professionals, teachers, doctors, psychologists were learning about the fact that, hold on a second, they can learn. They can recover. Not every child will recover, but certainly they can learn to become functional and independent human beings. And so parents must never give up on their children.
Ilona, for you, it started with David. It is a journey that continued with your third son, Aaron. And when he, again, he was born showing absolutely no signs of anything being wrong, and then got to a point and regressed after, in his case, going into hospital for a surgery for grommets. What went through your mind when once again you heard those words, your baby boy has autism?
Oh, you know, we experienced both times unimaginable grief. I think as a parent, you go into survival mode. You are so afraid of the unknown. I remember my husband saying when David was diagnosed with autism that he used to hope that he would just wake up in the morning and it would all have been a bad dream. When Aaron, my third son, was diagnosed with autism, we were utterly in shock. But this time we had a plan, and we had 10 years of research under our belt. You know, the teaching methodology applied behavior analysis that my third son, Aaron, received very early at 17 months, 7 hours a day, is actually in America endorsed by the U.S. Surgeon General, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and is covered for medical insurance in 49 states. So if it didn't bring results, why would medical aid cover it in 49 states? And with my youngest, Aaron, we did beat autism.
That's, I mean, that is, again, that's going to be something that I know listeners are going to go, what do you mean you beat autism? Talk to us, that 7 hours a day from 17 months, it's extraordinary to read in the book what that meant for you personally as a mother, what it meant for your family, the number of people involved in making sure that he had exposure to that therapy for so many hours a day. It is a tale of a labor of love in every respect. But the most remarkable thing is at the end of it, you have a little boy who headed off into primary school with an independent educational psychologist assessment saying, this is a normal, happy little boy who's going to be fine and is ready for school. When you read those words, what did it mean to you after all that you had been through to get him there?
It was like running the Comrades Marathon and actually crossing over the finish line. And just, you know, for me, when I fetch him from school, he's in grade one in a mainstream school. And when I fetch him from school and he runs across the field in his school uniform with his bag bouncing on his back, and he dives into my arms and he's so excited to tell me about his day. There's no better reward than that. And so 7 hours a day from 17 months, I know it sounds unheard of, but we did it. So every waking moment, Aaron was receiving the input he needed. Because what actually happens, Pippa, when a child is diagnosed with autism is that there is an interruption in their development. And so even though we don't demand from the child a response every minute of those 7 hours a day, we're giving them input. And really, if you look at all the research, early intervention sets the stage for recovery. It's never too late to start treatment. But when the child is younger than five, that's really when we want to start them on an intensive ABA program for recovery. However, if they're seven or nine, we can still get them communicating. We can still work towards parents achieving those goals for them that really just remains unimaginable at the point in time when they start the journey.
Can you give us an example of what forms ABA takes? Because I imagine the listeners going, well, what is this magical 7 hours a day of therapy? What are you actually doing?
Okay. So ABA uses positive reinforcement to teach children those skills they're missing. So what one child loves, another child doesn't necessarily love. So we're going to take what the child loves, not likes, and we're going to use that to teach him the skills that he's missing, he or she's missing. So at the Star Academy, we use a developmental curriculum called the Skills Developmental Curriculum that was created by our American affiliate CARD. And we are therefore experts in childhood development. This developmental curriculum will measure a child according to a typically developing child and then allow for us to set an IEP, Individualized Education Plan, that coupled with the ABA methodology, which has its roots in the principles of psychology, is a winning formula.
And to give some examples, for one of your sons, it was Barney that was the thing that was most loved in the universe. So I'm guessing you have heard every Barney tape and video and can probably play them in your sleep for the rest of your life, Ilona. For another child, it might be an obsession with fish or dinosaurs or rabbits or whatever it is. But whatever that thing is that you know that child loves most can be used as the carrot to get them committed to the therapy.
That's exactly. We were tortured by Barney the purple dinosaur. Even when I walk past the purple dinosaur, I kind of get cold shivers. I don't want to see Barney again for a while. But Barney did motivate David to get his best response, to give his best response.
Now, as you said, it's different for every child, and autism is different for every child. This is not a one-size-fits-all diagnosis, nor is it a one-size-fits-all therapy plan. You had amazing results with Aaron because you were able to start so young, because you knew about this therapy and had done all the research. That was not the same outcome for David, though. So tell us a little bit about David and where he is today.
Unfortunately, autism has not been kind to David, so I call David still severely autistic. However, because of applied behavior analysis, we are able to work towards a functional and independent life. David, and we're very proud of him, because just imagine, he had to live in a body that really did fail him. So everything was harder for him. Learning was difficult for him. Children with autism are sick, so many days they're not feeling well. So the opportunities to learn aren't so many when you have a very sick autistic child. But David currently runs a deli, and he independently makes pizza and biscuits, and he bakes bread, and just the smile on his face when other people eat his produce. He goes around to companies and he sells what he makes every day. So I definitely see a future for my severely autistic child. It took him some time, but because of ABA and the Star Academy, we were able to teach him to manage a deli. My message to parents is never to give up on your children. There's always something that can be done. And even if they're still severely autistic, you can find a life for them.
One of your biggest hopes and wishes expressed throughout the book was to hear David's voice. Has that ever happened?
We hear it minimally, but we hear it. The deafening silence is something I can't describe to your listeners today, Pippa. It's just, I can't find the words after writing a book. And they'll have to read it. In fact, this evening we're launching the book at the book lounge. So if there are any of your listeners who would like to come along, I guarantee that it will be an inspirational evening. But as a parent, can you imagine facing a situation where your child is not able to tell you what they want or how they're feeling or if they saw? So today, David communicates mostly using a communication device, mm-hmm. using his iPad, and he's actually able to tell us a lot through his iPad. He can type sentences. He loves roller coasters and Gold Reef City. So this is it's a request he makes weekly. And he can speak vocally, in a limited way, but he does. He is able to say some things. And when we hear his voice, you know, we just jump to get him what he wants, because we know how hard he worked to form those words.
I can't not ask you about the boy in the middle. And one of the most moving things reading this book was to get to the part at the end that was written by Eli, who is your middle son, but effectively became the big brother. And I got such a strong sense of the feeling of responsibility he carries for both of his brothers and his knowledge that he's got to fight for them alongside you. Talk to us a little bit about the impact on Eli's childhood of having two brothers who needed such intense focus from his parents. It must have been hard for you as a mother to know that your attention had to be split that way unequally.
It was extremely difficult. We waged war on autism for, it's almost 16 years now because David is 17. Mm-hmm. So Ellie kind of was last on the list. And I'm glad you asked this question because recently there was a parent who came to see me and her son is 4 and she's embarking on the autism road and she's going to be battling autism now. And she said to me, I have a daughter and an older daughter, and I'm just so worried. We already feel guilty and it's 3 weeks in. And I said to her, don't feel guilty. You know, this was her fate as much as it was yours. And so you're absolutely correct. Ellie felt a responsibility from a very young age. You will see in the book, Saving My Sons, he actually mentions that other children at school would get the teacher's attention by being the class clown. But instead, he wanted to do well at school academically because his parents were already so broken. He knew that if he was naughty in any kind of way, that we just wouldn't be able to deal with it. But Ellie is the person he is today and will become the adult in the future because of his circumstances. And I just want to put the parents at ease because every family faces challenges. So this was our challenge and we created a new normal within the world that autism presented. My husband Martin actually gave Ellie a lot of time and would be able to sit on the floor and play with him. I was still in mourning. I mourned for many, many years. I mourned the loss of this normal road I thought I was walking with my oldest son, David. So it was very difficult for me when Ellie was a baby to give him time and to play with him. But like I said, Ellie is the young man today he is because of the home that he's lived in. And he's got so much empathy and compassion for others because of his journey with his brothers.
He's written the most beautiful chapter in this book, I have to say. It was really very moving to read. He's shared tips for the siblings of autistic children on what has helped him and some advice, a lot of advice for any reader, I think, Ilona, about how people respond. For example, he wrote about what it's like to be in the line at the shopping center when David has a meltdown. And he said people stare, and he's learned to stare straight back at them until they feel uncomfortable and look away. But they're very big thoughts. And for a young man, I was very moved by what I read about his advice on being a big brother or sister to someone with autism, but also on for society in general. Let's talk a little bit about social isolation, because one of the things you mentioned in the book is how isolated you felt as a family. You've described mourning. You've described this as a kind of loss because you lost the vision of the child you thought you were going to have. And yet nowhere in society is there the structure for supporting a family going through that kind of loss. When you think about how we would support you had you physically lost David, talk to us a little bit about that isolation factor.
Absolutely. When my oldest son, David, was diagnosed with autism finally at 22 months, it felt like a living death. As you've said in the book, Saving My Sons, I actually talk about the fact that there were no prayer groups. There were no people coming over to offer us comfort. And so it's almost like I was grieving for a child that I hadn't lost. It was an indescribable pain. It was very, very difficult. And you immediately withdraw from your friends and from the community because it feels like everyone has a normal child and the children are behaved and they go to school and they do what they mean to do. And your child is the one lying on the floor tantruming in Pick and Pay. So even going to the shops or going to synagogue, going to church can become difficult when you have a child with autism who is not receiving the treatment that they should be receiving. So it was very, very difficult. And we actually work a lot with families in an underprivileged community called Tembisa. And these parents, especially when we do parent support for them, will actually raise the fact that they feel so isolated from the community. And we try to give them the confidence to take their children out and to be proud of them. And we try to give them the skills they need to successfully take their child to church or to the shops.
We've only scratched the surface of a very deep conversation here, but for those who are interested and intrigued by what you've heard, I want you to go and look for the book. Which is it out in bookstores as of now?
It's out in bookstores nationwide, exclusive books, Reader's Warehouse, Takealot, Loot. And as you say, autism is a global crisis. According to the Center for Disease Control in America, every one in 59 children One in 59 is now receiving an autism diagnosis. I call on all medical professionals, teachers, doctors, psychologists, open your minds to possibility. Read the research. Learn about the treatments for autism. This need not be a debilitating lifelong condition. But if it is mistreated and if it is left without the correct treatment, the fate of the parents, the child, the family is really very sad.
Her name is Ilona Gershovitz. She is the author with Marion Scher of Saving My Sons, A Journey with Autism. Thank you so much for joining us today to share some of your story.
Thank you so much for having me.